So hi, this is Jackie with Panama Relocation Tours. I want to thank you so much for calling in this Saturday for our conference call. Last weekend we did a Q&A conference call for an hour and a half, and that replay is already available at Panama Relocation Tours in our blog area. Today I'm going to get back to doing an interview with someone that lives here in Panama, just to give you a sense of what it's like for expats to be living here in Panama. So, Andrea, are you there?
I am.
Okay, I want to welcome you to the call. So my guest speaker is Andrea Cook, and I'm going to let Andrea tell you a little bit about why you decided to move to Panama and when you moved to Panama.
So I moved to Panama. My folks are here. They moved here in 2007, and I had visited them throughout the years, but I ended up making the move after two really horrible winters where I swore I would not spend another winter where I was. And I took off and moved here in September 2011. At that time, I think I did border hops for two or three times. In April of 2012, the Friendly Nations visa came out. Thank you. And at that time, they were giving with the Friendly Nations visa a permanent work permit, and it was an automatic type thing at that time. So that opened up a lot of doors for me. I was actually 45 when I moved here. So let me
tell everybody what you mean by a border hop, because I know what you're talking about, but a lot of people on the call don't know what you're talking about. So in Panama, you can stay here as a tourist for 6 months. And it used to be, the rules used to be that then you had to leave for at least 3 days. You had to leave Panama for at least 3 days before you could come back, and then you get a new stamp in your passport and you could stay for another 6 months. The reality was that you could drive to the Costa Rica border. It's about an hour from my house. You could stamp out of Panama, stamp into Costa Rica, maybe do a little shopping, have some lunch, stamp out of Costa Rica, stamp back into Panama and do the whole thing in one day. So that is a border hop. And a lot of people used to do that because the requirements were you only had to be gone for 3 days, but the reality was you could be gone for 1 day. I understand why you did that because it was hard to, you know, if you didn't have any kind of a pension, then all the other visa options were very, very expensive, like $160,000 or more. So you either had to wait till you had a pension, and then all of a sudden when the Friendly Nation visa came along, it just opened up the doors for people to come. You might not know this, Andrea, but when I first moved here, I actually got the pensionado visa because I had no plans to start a tour business. I came here to be semi-retired, run my real estate company, my online real estate company, and just take it easy. And God had other plans for me to do this thing. So whenever the Friendly Nation visa came along, I had to renounce my pensionado visa, and then I applied for the Friendly Nation visa also so I could get that work permit to do tours.
Yeah. Oh, it was a wonderful thing. Now, back in the time when I was doing border hop, and I think you were here even before me, but when we did a border hop, one day it literally took me 20 minutes to ring out of Panama, go over to Costa Rica, check out of Costa Rica, come back to Panama, and I was done within 20, 25 minutes. So
yeah.
Back in that time, it was a really easy thing to do, and it wasn't a big deal. So, but it got progressively more strict on that as the years have gone by.
So, and by the way, Andrea lives in the Boquete area, just a little bit down the road from where I live, actually. So you decided to get away from the cold weather and move to Boquete. Well, at 45 years old, you really weren't ready to retire yet. What were your plans whenever you got here?
I wasn't quite sure what my plans were going to be, but I've traveled all my life, and I'm one of those people that I really like. I thrive in change, and I had been to 46 different countries by the time I was 40. So I wasn't, the cultural differences and everything, I knew that wasn't going to be an issue for me. It was just finding what I was going to do. But I had time, I had savings, and I had, I had time to do that. And then to back it all up, I have been a travel agent for as long as I can remember, since I was a kid. I mean, in 19 or so, I think I got my first travel agent job, and had been doing that for forever, with meeting planning and conference planning and, little differences here and there, but all still around travel. So the one thing I didn't even, and that was the one thing I didn't even think of, but there was a need, and due to the work permit, I think it took me almost 2.5 years of jumping through hoops to get the business license, and the ATP comes and inspects me every 3 months, and just everything that I needed to do to open up. There were a lot of different things that had to happen for me to do that, and it just took time. And with language barriers sometimes, too, there are misunderstandings, so that didn't help out a whole lot either. But anyway, so I was able to open up. I opened up a travel agency, and it has been going very, very well, obviously not right now. So, but it's been a great adventure. So, when luck was on my side this go-around.
I think in Panama, don't they require that travel agencies have a storefront, that they have like a brick-and-mortar kind of a business instead of being online?
Yes. Before they approved me, I had to have my office open, had to have the signage, I had to have the telephones, the desks, I had to have everything in order, including computers, everything ready to go. But mm-hmm. what they don't tell you is that when they come to inspect you for approval, then they have to write up a report and send it to Panama City and get the approval before they can actually say, here is your document, you're good to go. And it took almost 7 months from the point of having everything ready to go to being able to actually open up the door. And mm-hmm. and I wasn't about to open up that door before I had that piece of paper in hand. So anyway, it's just very interesting the expense you have to go through and continue to go through for months just to be able to get that piece of paper to be able to open up.
Right. It was, when I first moved here, I was just doing some private tours for friends and real estate investor friends for the first couple of years. And when the Friendly Nation visa came along and I decided to go big on the Panama relocation tours and be more visible, then I also had to jump through all of those hoops with the business license and permits and insurance and all kinds of special things that you have to have.
Oh, yeah, bonds and everything that you have to have. Absolutely.
So
now, does the ATP come to you, too?
Oh, yeah. I don't have to have a storefront. They just had to see the vehicle that I was using. But the bottom line is you can start a business here in Panama, but you're going to jump through hoops, and don't think that you're going to come down here and move here in September and be an operational in October. It doesn't work that way. Maybe October 2 years down the road, it's going to take a while. You might have a great business idea, but you can't really start doing a business legally in Panama until you have that work permit in your hand, until you have your business license and your social securities set up and all kinds of different things that you have to do. So if you're planning to start a business down here, you need to understand that you're going to need a good attorney to help you jump through those hoops to make sure that you dot the I's and you cross the T's. Because if you mess up one little thing, they kind of put you at the bottom of the pile of the list, and then they'll get back to you when they get around to it. So you want to make sure you have everything up just right when they come to say that it's okay for you to go into business.
Oh, and I got bumped down to the bottom of the list a few times. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, one false move, and there you go. And it's like, oh. But, you know, sometimes, again, there's a language barrier where you don't understand certain things. But, you know, I mean, I will be the first to say I was at fault for a lot of the delays.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know. But, you know, you live and learn. I outlasted them, though. I just kept banging on the door. Finally, they decided to let me in. So, well, it was okay.
Right. Now, when we do Panama relocation tours, one of the things that's included in the tour is the flight back to Panama City, because we end the tour on the far western side of Panama in Chiriquí Province, and then we fly you back to Panama City so you can get your international flight to go home. And Andrea is the travel agent that we have been using for many, many years to help arrange those flights to get everybody back. So I know that there's people that are on the call that they've already been on a tour and they have all their paperwork ready and they can't wait for the borders to open up so they can come back and move to Panama. But there's also some people on the call that they haven't visited yet, and they're also just chomping at the bit and waiting for those borders to open up. And I know some airlines are selling tickets, and then they turn around and cancel it, and then they reschedule, and then they cancel that one, and then they reschedule. What advice would you have for people that are wanting to get into Panama with us not really knowing for sure when the borders are going to open?
Well, you have to wait. You just have to wait. And here's the thing with the airlines selling tickets. So, and this all started in March, where they closed in March and said, and there was the decreto that said it was closed for 30 days. So it doesn't mean that the airport's going to open in 30 days. It just means that the airport's going to be closed for 30 days. So that document they send to the airlines. And all the airlines input everything, pull their flights out for those 30 days. So when you go online to book it, you see a flight, you know, for, oh, well, I see I can get a flight on August 22nd from Houston to Panama City on United. Well, of course you can, because all United has is that document stating that the airport is closed for 30 days. So it's a problem, and it's a pain for the airlines as well, because they have to do all these changes and cancel all these flights. So if you have something right now, if you have travel and coming from the U.S. or Canada, or actually at least from the U.S., Air Canada has been tough. If you're coming from the U.S. to Panama, wait until the airline cancels that flight, and then they have to refund that money. So if you cancel the flight before it's canceled by the airlines, well, then you just have the credit on that airline to use for future travel. And right now they're not having people pay a penalty fee or anything like that. But let's face it, not knowing how long the airline is going to be holding on to your money, it would be better if it's back in your pocket rather than sitting at an airline where you may want to take another airline. Who knows? But, you know, it's always best let them cancel so that you can go and get a refund.
And then do you know, are they being pretty good and expeditious about issuing these refunds, or is it like pulling teeth to get your money back?
Well, It depends. There are certain things. But the U.S. carriers have actually been very good. I think Spirit has been tough, but I really don't book Spirit. So I think Spirit has been tough, but Delta, United, American, Copa now is refunding tickets, and Copa's been doing them within 3 weeks lately. So everybody, I mean, and they're all usually within one billing cycle. So within 1 month, they will refund that. Now, ask that question 3 months ago, and there would have been a different answer. But I take it, I don't know if we have any Europeans or anybody else. Now, those are a different little ball of wax. So if you do and you want to send me, if you want to talk about that kind of travel, that's a different ball of wax. And just my advice to you is don't book your travel until you know for sure that the airport is going to be open. Don't just take the fact that, well, the airport's closed for 30 more days. That means August 22nd, I can come on down. I'm going to go ahead and book my flight, which you can because the airlines believe that the airport will be open then. And that's really not the case. So, you know, just hold off if you're coming from the EU or any other place, really. But if, you know,
I think the other thing that's important to know is this whole pandemic, it's really thrown a monkey wrench in everything, and we just don't know what the future holds for it. So when they do eventually open up the airport, they may require a 14-day quarantine in a hotel in Panama City or at the home that you have here.
We don't know what they're going to, and we don't even know when they open up if they'll even allow people from the U.S. to come here.
We don't know.
That's another thing. Yeah. That's a consideration. So the one thing you can do if you're calling in from the U.S. is you could go to pa.usembassy.gov. And they have what the entry and exit requirements are, what the latest listings of the latest things that they know as far as when the airport or how long the airport's going to be closed. I'm not going to say when it's going to be open, but what the last thing has been issued has said. You can find out a lot of information just from the Panamanian U.S. Embassy website. So that's always a good thing to keep in your pocket. If you're not getting news on this, just take a look at the website, and they're very much up to date.
Right. And, you know, with all of this in mind, it's the other reason that we can't give you any kind of a definitive date on when we're going to be able to start tours again. Even if the airport opened up and they said people can come into Panama, but you need a 14-day quarantine, we would not be able to start doing tours yet until it's safe for us to do tours without that 14-day quarantine. Not too many people want to come down here and spend 14 days stuck in a hotel room. Literally, you cannot leave only to get on the bus and get out and do the tour. So we need to wait until it's a more normal situation. Keeping in mind that right now, they have a plan to open up the economy in six different blocks. And most of Panama were only in block number two. So that means that not only is the airport closed, but most of the hotels are closed. Many restaurants are closed. They only have takeout or home delivery. So there's no way we can do a tour until we get back to more normal situations here in Panama. Now, for those of you that are, you know, maybe you bought our online Panama relocation guide and you're planning to come down on your own, you might not mind it too much to stay in a hotel in Panama City for a couple of weeks and then continue on your journey. Currently, though, they have restrictions that you can't travel in between provinces. So it's way too soon for anybody to start planning on when you can come down until we get a better handle on this pandemic here in Panama. And we get, I would say, to block six, where things are at least block five, where things are a lot more opened up and a lot more normal. So, Andrea, so now we've talked about that, about when to book your flight. So the next thing that I'd like to talk about is just your life here. I know that you really like going to the beach also. Now, you live in Boquete, so we're not very far from some really good beaches on the Pacific and only about a three-hour drive to beaches on the Caribbean side of Panama. What are some of your favorite beaches that you like to go to? Oops, I think we lost the connection. Let me send her a message on Facebook to call right back. Hold on. Here she comes. There you are. You're back. So I don't know if you heard my question, but so we've talked a lot about already about, you know, when to book your flight, and basically don't book anything until I send out an email that say it's safe to do it. Just hold off. Even though they'll sell you a ticket, don't buy a ticket. Wait. But now let's just talk about your life here in Panama. Before the pandemic, especially, Andrea, I know that you like spending time at the beaches. What are some of your favorite beaches here? Whoops, we have a bit of a bad connection. Let me send her a message. Maybe she doesn't know. So I sent her a message to call back in because we have a bit of a bad connection on her line. And she's just down the road from me. I don't know why that just happens sometimes with the phone calls. And, you know, a lot of people have asked me why I don't do video calls like on Zoom or other things like that. And we've tried doing Zoom or Facebook Live or YouTube Live before, but the problem is that some of the people that we're talking to, they're in a place where they might have 1 or 2 megabits of internet speed, and it just won't support doing a video call. And you know, I have 100 megabits of internet speed because I have fiber optics, so I don't have a problem on my end, but some of the people that are our guest speakers where they live in Panama, they have very, very, very slow internet speed, and that just makes it impossible to do the video calls. And we found that the audio calls, we can usually get a better connection. Unfortunately, not today. Andrea's got a message to call back in just a little bit.
Hey, I'm so sorry.
That's okay. I just told them that, you know, it's just the way it is here in Panama. You got to roll with the punches.
I know. Internet service sometimes isn't the most predictable thing.
Yeah, and it's, you know, if a cloud is over your house, it could affect your internet speed. It's just crazy little things. So I was telling everybody how much you live in Boquete, but you love to spend time at the beaches. What are some of your favorite beach towns here in Panama?
You know, I love Petosi if I'm in for a good drive. I love the town of Petosi. I'll do Las Lajas. It's just wonderful. And I also like Puerto Amoyas. I have a dog. And so I like taking him to Petosi, and I like taking him to Puerto Amoyas to Hooked on Panama. So he can come with me, go run on the beach, have a good time. So, yes, I take my dog on vacation for the most part. Other than that, though, truly, I just love hiking. And I could hike all day, every day. So this total lockdown on the weekends kills me. But hiking's really what I love to do more than anything.
And there are some great hiking opportunities here in the Boquete area. And there's also several different hiking groups that you can go with other people, or you can go off on your own. It's better to go with a guide or go with a group at least the first couple of times to get familiar with the trail, but then you can go out on your own. There's so many, even just walking along the road, there's just some really interesting little side streets you can go on.
Oh, it's never ending. And the great thing with going with the groups is that you're seeing different areas, things that you wouldn't normally see, places you wouldn't normally go. And it helps you learn the areas as far as hiking is concerned, as far as just, you know, if you're looking to put roots down but you're not sure what areas, going hiking is a great way to be informed on that as well.
So where are some of your favorite places to go hiking here in the Boquete area? Probably the Pipeline Trail. It's popular with everyone.
Yeah, I mean, that's good. I love doing, my favorite is the Lost Waterfalls. Love that
uh-huh.
one. It's a little bit of a challenge, but the payback on it, you know, doing the huffing and puffing is just wonderful. Otherwise, it's just a lot of just regular agricultural trails around the farms areas. They're not trails that you go into and that you pay money for, like the Pipeline, Lost Waterfalls. I like kind of getting out and kind of venturing off into other little areas that other people don't go. So I kind of like being one with nature without a whole lot of other people around me, and there are a ton of those. But, you know, there are so – I can't even begin to tell you how many hiking places there are. You know, if you go outside and you look to your north and you go, oh, that looks cloudy over there, or we could get rained out, and you could say, well, you know, let's go for warmer and go down the caldera area. And then – pretty much you'll get out of the rain and it's not an issue. So there, you know, you just go wherever the clouds aren't and you're good to go.
You know, one of the things that people comment on when they come on the tour is, oh, I didn't get to see any really pretty birds, and I didn't get to see a monkey, and I didn't get to see a sloth, and I didn't get to see these things. Well, it's because we're riding around in a vehicle, and we might get a chance to see some of those things. But when you're out there, one with nature, as you said, and you're walking around, you have a much better chance of perhaps seeing a quetzal or a sloth or a monkey or other things, because they're not going to be right next to the road usually.
No, February, March, the Pipeline's got the quetzals. I've seen sloths down the Pianista Trail, actually. But mm-hmm. it's a little veered off trail off the Pianista that you can go on. Again, you have to kind of know your way. Don't do these things on your own, especially for the first time. In all seriousness, accidents happen. But, you know, I make sure everybody knows where I am, where I'm going, the whole nine yards before I ever leave the house. But I've been uh-huh. hiking for years, and I have first aid kit with me, the whole nine yards. So I know what I'm doing, and I you know, the things that I haven't been on before, I will not go alone. But after I've done them a few times, I have no issue going alone on most all of them. But
right.
always safety first. Always make sure. There are some trails that they don't have cell phone service down some of these trails. So those may not be the best ones to go out alone on. So just make sure you're very aware of your surroundings. You've been doing it a long time before you go off on alone on something. Things happen.
Right, and especially when you first move here, it's a lot of fun to go with a group because then it helps you meet people that live in the area that are like-minded instead of just being by yourself all the time. So initially, you probably want to go with a group for safety reasons as well as just a way to meet people.
Absolutely, and there are beginning hiking groups. There are more advanced intermediate hiking groups. So depending on your experience, you know, you could start with the beginnings, and then if that's too easy for you, move on to another group. And again, like you said, it's just the whole bonding with other people, meeting people, finding out things that you'd like to know through them. It's just a great way to get to know your community.
Mm-hmm. So I know, what are some other things that you enjoy doing here in this area besides hiking when we don't have a pandemic going on?
Yeah. You know, I have a lot. You know, we all have our group of friends, and we'll, you know, every week we have people that we'll cook dinner this week, next week you cook dinner, and we kind of have a group of people that get together and do dinners, and each, you know, sometimes we'll do a potluck, or, you know, you get together, you have fun. I love to cook, and it's great. It's just great having that bond. The good thing about people here is it's very easy to meet friends. Be careful, but everybody has that adventuresome spirit, and it's very easy to bond with people here just on that one thing alone. You've all made the move. You've all done this. We've all had our struggles. So it's unlike anything you've ever done before. So it's a whole lot of fun to meet people and get together. And I mean, you know, we have like once a week play bridge or whatever. But personally, I haven't had a whole lot of fun lately just because of work with the whole COVID thing. But I'm finally able in the last couple of weeks to just kind of breathe and have a little bit of downtime myself. So, but you do whatever you want. You bring your hobbies. One thing I do want to tell people is think to yourself of what are you going to do on a daily basis when you're retired? If you're coming here and planning on retiring, what is going to be your daily thing? I mean, certainly you're not going to sit by the TV watching Wheel of Fortune all day long. I mean, at least I hope not. You're not going to move to Panama to do that. But what is your passion? What is it that you want to do that is going to fill your heart with joy? And think about that.
Very good point. So many people have had all these things that they've wanted to do, but they didn't have time because they were working so much. So things like gardening or writing a book or taking up painting classes,
right,
and jewelry making. There's, you know, now you'll finally have the time to do those things. And you're going to find that in throughout Panama, whether it's Boquete or Coronado or Pedici, there's going to be other people that have an interest in doing those things also. So you're going to instantly be able to connect or quickly be able to connect with people that are like-minded that can help you find the right materials to do the things you want to do. Where do you get seeds, or how do you do this, or what's the best plant to put here, or the what doesn't work, and so
right.
there's people from, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, there are tons of clubs here too. If you're into photography, there are photography clubs. If you're into golf, loads of people playing golf. If you're, you know, whatever it is, there are painting classes here that people do. There are so many different clubs. That the community here in Boquete is just truly amazing, because if you're bored, you could just see, you could look online and see, oh, Big Daddy's has got a cooking class on how to make a burrito or something. You know, there is something literally for everyone. If you have that actor person in you, there's, you know, you can go, they have plays here that you can be in. And they do, they're really nice little productions. So there's really, truly, there's something for everybody. I cannot even imagine not being bored here. Now, I work, but if I didn't work, I still wouldn't be bored because there's so much to do. And I feel like mm-hmm. I miss out on so much working. So,
yeah. So speaking of missing stuff, are there things that you miss from the United States that you wish we had here that we don't?
No. I really, truly, I mean, I've heard the whole thing, well, I can't get Campbell's tomato soup here, or you know, stuff like that, but I don't miss anything. I can find everything I need right here. You know, the stores, the grocery stores, you've got PriceSmart, which is the equivalent of Costco. You've got, you know, retail-wise, we've got this new mall that opened up in near David that has great department stores in it. So shopping isn't an issue. Food definitely is not an issue. I mean, things that when I first moved here, my favorite vegetable, I loved artichokes. And finding them here was, you know, well, you'd find them here once a year. And now Super Buru has them like every week. Oh my God, I'm in heaven. So just when you think that you're missing something, you're really not. So, but I think grocery stores, now again, I've lived here for close to 10 years now. So it's, maybe I'm just used to it and I don't remember. I don't know. But far as I'm concerned, there's nothing out there that I can't find or figure out a way to make it.
And the other thing is, if they don't have it in our little town of Boquete, you can drive 30 minutes down the road to David, and they're going to have it down there, most likely. And if you really don't want to go, and a friend is saying, hey, I'm going to David tomorrow, you need anything, you can say, oh, yeah, if you see this or this, pick it up for me. So there's always that camaraderie of people that they know that you like artichokes, and if they see artichokes, they're just going to get them for you because they know you would want them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, the one thing I have heard people say, and that is that hand tools here are inferior to what they are in the U.S. So if you have really good hand tools, those things would be great if you can figure out a way to bring them.
But you know what? You don't need to bring your hand tools because it's so affordable to just hire someone to fix stuff for you. You don't have to fix it yourself anymore. You don't, because it's so expensive in North America to hire someone to come and do a little plumbing job or a little electrical job or to paint your house or to do other things that cost a fortune. Where I came from in Texas, but here it's so cheap, and you're giving work to a local person, so you don't really need your tools because you can get somebody here that has all the tools already that can do the job for almost nothing for you. The other day, I have a gate at my property, an automatic gate, and I leave it open most of the time, close it at night, but it was kind of sticking. And I called my favorite guy to come and take a look at it, and he fixed the whole thing. And I said, how much? And he said, $20. It was just $20. And he was there for an hour working on that thing. So that's what I'm saying. You just don't need to bring it. When you can hire someone for $20 to do a job for you or paint a house for $200 to paint the whole house, it just doesn't hardly make sense for you to keep on doing those things unless it's your passion to be fixing stuff. If you really like fixing it, then you might want to bring stuff. But keep in mind, you can get the work done here at such an affordable price that you don't have to do it yourself anymore.
True.
So what other advice would you have for people that are thinking about moving to Panama besides that exploratory trip that they definitely need to do before they just pack their bags and move down here?
One thing I will say, and that is from talking with people who want me to book their flights coming over here, and a lot of them don't want to get cars. They're going to stay in Boquete for 2 weeks or wherever they think they want to live, but they don't want to rent a car. And I have to tell you, I personally, if I'm thinking about moving somewhere, I want to get in a car and I want to get lost. You can't get lost in Boquete. All the roads loop back into town. So get lost. Go. Drive. see things. Don't just get yourself coming here or going someplace where you're just walking around the next four blocks thinking, I wonder if I could live here. You really need to look around, drive around, see what's what. I mean, Boquete has like 28 different microclimates or something like that. 28 different microclimates. I mean, every neighborhood has a different weather pattern. So that would be good for you to see. Or talk about and go to places where you can talk to people. I know you take them to the Tuesday morning market, which is wonderful. Mm-hmm. And it's a great place for people to go and meet other people there. See what they're doing with their day. See what they're selling. A lot of artwork. People are making jewelry, this and that. But it's good to meet them and ask them questions. You know, go around different places and buy different coffees from different thinkers and find out, you know, how they're different and how, you know, what you like. But kind of, if you're serious about it, just move around. Just don't pen yourself in to just taking a taxi from one place to another, because you're not going to learn that much. So if you're thinking about coming here and you're too scared to drive a car, which, you know, this is going to come across really negative, and I don't mean it to be, but if you're going to make that move and be adventuresome and get yourself a car.
Mm-hmm.
I know with your tour, it's wonderful, but after the tour with people who were staying over some, I think it would be great. Get a car.
Most people do. Yeah, when they stay over, they do get a car. I can tell you, when I first moved here, one of the things that just totally freaked me out about driving in Panama, but you get used to it after a while, is especially in October and November, we get a lot of rain. So on either side of the road, there's this big ravine where the water can flow so it doesn't get on the road. And the roads are not as wide as what you're used to where you live. They're pretty narrow. So I was so afraid I was going to get into one, I was going to drive into one of those ravines, or that my tire would get in there and then I wouldn't be able to get out. So the other thing is, driving here is a little bit different. Panama City, it's crazy driving. Don't drive in Panama City, but outside of Panama City, the driving is easy outside of Panama City. But just know that the roads and through the different neighborhoods are going to be more narrow, so it might not make sense to get some great big gigantic SUV where you feel like you need the whole road all to yourself, but maybe get a smaller car. And then you won't feel like you're going to go in that ditch like I did when I first moved here.
And one other thing saying about the rain, and that is, you know, listen, as far as Latin American roads are concerned, Panama's got the best roads out there. But there's still some crummy roads. Hey, we live on Volcancito. It's going to get interesting here soon. But in the rainy season, for the most part, and this is, I'm going to make a general statement here, but the rule of thumb is it rains in the afternoons, a couple of hours, and then that's that. But when it's raining, we have roads with a lot of potholes, and when it's raining, you cannot see these potholes because they're full of water. And, you know, you can get a flat tire, you could wreck the car. So if you're not used to it and you're not used to where the potholes are, don't drive when it's raining hard where you can't see well.
In the rainy season here, a lot of people just plan their day around the rain. They might get up a little bit earlier, go do their banking, go to the grocery store, meet their friends for lunch, and try to be back home by 2 or 3 o'clock, knowing that the rain's probably going to start after 2 or 3 o'clock. And if you're not on the roads, then you don't have to worry about it. Sometimes that's not always possible, but you learn to just plan your days around the time that it's probably going to rain, which is usually going to be after 3. This time of year, it's more like 5 o'clock. After 5 or 6, it might rain. Not today. It's still got blue skies and sunshine out there today.
It's been a beautiful day. Couple of days. I know.
Yeah, but
nice and
more
warm.
In October, November, you'll just learn to readjust your schedule. Don't make an appointment for 4 o'clock in the afternoon in October, November, because you're probably going to have to drive through the rain to get there and drive through the rain to get back. So you just learn to adjust your schedule to these different seasons. And then in January and February, it's pretty windy. So it's not the kind of wind that it could knock you over, but it's definitely going to be a little bit more windy. But once you live here for a while, you learn these different weather patterns. And like Andrea said, on one side of the valley, the weather can be pouring down rain. On the other side of the valley, it can have blue skies and sunshine. It can be completely different. Or even between where I live and where Andrea lives, which is maybe a mile or two at the most, the weather can be different.
Right.
So you
Absolutely.
Just have to make adjustments based on what the weather conditions are. And once you get used to it, you might want to drive in the rain. I've been here a long time, more than 10 years, and I still try to avoid driving in the rain whenever it's possible. So better be safe than being sorry. So, Andrea,
absolutely.
If it's okay with you, I'm going to open it up for a few questions from our audience. Is that okay?
Sure. Of course.
Okay. Okay. Our first caller is David. Go ahead.
Hey, Jackie. How you doing? So good to talk to you
good.
Again. I wanted to thank you and your family for these calls, so all your business and associating yourself with relocating families to Panama. I have looked at YouTube videos on Portugal, the Philippines, Ecuador. You and your business are the only one that I'm aware of taking people, families, to different parts of Panama to give them what it's like to live in Panama, and hopefully they can see if Panama works for them. For that, I thank you very much, Jackie.
You're welcome.
I have several parts to my question. With all you do in regards to assisting people, families from the U.S. and Canada, do you, one, have an association, a close association with either the U.S. or the Canadian embassy? If you do, can you tell us what circumstances of how you were able to call upon them and what was the outcome? If you don't have a close association with either embassy, can you tell me why you don't?
So I don't have a close association. I mean, I know the people at the embassy. I've talked to them. I've sent them an email, especially when I've been trying to help people with humanitarian flights that wanted to leave the country. But I haven't really felt a need to have a relationship with the embassy since I've been here. You know, their whole thing is that if you have some kind of problems, they're going to help you with it, but there just hasn't been a need to have a relationship with the embassy. What about you, Andrea? In your line of work, have you felt a need to have a relationship with the embassy?
No, really, I haven't. Unlike you, other than calling and trying to help people get a humanitarian flight out. But we have, and I don't know, it's not province-wise. I think it's district-wise. It's all the different districts have U.S. wardens, which are volunteers with Canada. I think they have one with Canada, too, don't they?
Yeah, Canada has it, too.
Perfect. And so these are people within each of the communities that you can go to for any help that you may need or questions with the embassy. So because
right.
of them and all
they
of
call
them, help,
they call them liaisons now. I guess the name warden, people didn't like that name, so they call them liaisons. So these are people,
okay.
like Andrea said, they're volunteers for the Canadian embassy or for the U.S. embassy, and they live in your town. So I know George and I know Denise, the two people that are the liaisons for our area. So if I needed anything from the embassy, any information from the embassy, I wouldn't even have to contact the embassy directly. I could contact the liaison. I did have one situation. This happened maybe 8 years ago, that there was a gentleman that came on my tour, and it was a one-way trip. He was coming on the tour, said, "I'm moving to Panama. I'd never been here before." Came with one duffel bag. And he rented a house, and he was doing the hiking and doing yoga and just loving it here. Already had a girlfriend. He was only here a month. And we were supposed to, a group of us, were going to have dinner at Mike's Global Grill for some live music. They were having Latin music night, a special dinner. And he pre-ordered his dinner, and then he didn't show up. So I kept calling him and texting him and didn't respond. And I thought, well, you know, maybe he decided to go someplace with his girlfriend. And so I didn't bother it too much. But then as a couple of days went by, I drove by his house several times. I saw his car was there. I went and knocked on the door, and there was no answer. So I got worried. I got real worried about him. So I contacted the person at the time that was the liaison for the U.S. Embassy, because this guy was a U.S. citizen. And he contacted the police, and they all went over there together, and they broke into the house, and they discovered he'd had a heart attack and passed away. But that was the situation where I could have called the police, but my first stop was to call the embassy, because if he was in some kind of danger, if there was a problem, the embassy would know exactly what to do, how to handle everything. So even though I don't deal with the U.S. Embassy big building in Panama City, I have a close connection with all of the liaisons throughout the country. Another time someone contacted me because they couldn't find their brother in the Pedici area. They said that they hadn't talked to them in 2 weeks, and they, no matter what, they couldn't find him. And I knew who the liaison was for the Los Santos province, so I contacted her, Jackie, and she put out a search party, and they found this guy. He just decided to go off-grid, go camping on the beach. He just didn't want to be around anybody or talk to anybody. But so those are some situations where it helps to know who all the different liaisons are.
Thank you very much.
It's true. And it's also a good idea if you're going to go out and do something out of the normal, just know that, I mean, people look out for one another here. And and if something is going on that's out of the norm, we do get nervous and concerned about you. So just always try to stay in touch as much as possible so nobody gets worried.
Right. So our next caller is James. Go ahead.
Hi, Jack, I have a quick question. Last week I heard you talk about how the mayor of Pedici...
Yeah, we can barely hear you, James.
Last week you mentioned that the dry season, and actually near Pedici and up to Chitre and Los Alvos, had very little precipitation. So I'm wondering, what's the situation for getting water to a residence in those areas?
So I can tell you that it's not just the dry season, but all year long. That in the Herrera and Los Santos province, they get much less rain than the rest of the country. And because of that, sometimes they do have water shortages in that area. One of the things that I advise everybody to do when they move to Panama and they rent a house is make sure you get a house that has a big reserve water tank, because if there is a shortage of water or if the water pressure is low, you won't even notice it if you have a reserve water tank because you have a lot of extra water. So that's the situation. Next caller is Michael. Go ahead.
Yeah, Jackie, just want to echo, just like what everybody says, we are so grateful for the service you're providing for everybody. I definitely want to take a tour instead of doing it on my own. I want to be an alumni and one of your peeps. My question was...
Hopefully soon. Maybe, honestly, it might not be till January, but we're not going to do a tour until we know it's safe for you and us and everybody.
Totally understood and appreciated. I was wondering on, as far as, like you mentioned, like last week, as far as like banking, stuff like that, and a little bit on offshore banking, that the rates were like maybe 2.5-3%. I kind of looked online, and they had said like there were some banks that offered like 3-4% on jumbo CDs, and then like credit unions that offered like maybe as much as like, you know, like 4-6%.
Don't stay away from the credit unions. There's too many problems with the credit unions. Banks are right now are paying like 1.75 to 2.5%, depending on the bank, on just a regular savings account. And then if you go into some kind of a CD, you can make quite a bit more. But stick with the banks. They have really good rules and regulations for the banks. They're monitored closely by the country. But I've had people that have lost money and had a lot of problems with the credit union, so I would avoid that.
Well, I was thinking the reason I was kind of asking that is instead of buying or whatever right away, just have a, you know, get the monthly, you know, monthly cash flow from the CD while I'm renting and really finding out where I want to go. So the insurance on the banks would be trustworthy and whatnot.
There isn't any insurance on your bank account. There's not like an FDIC. And by the way, you need to read the fine print on the FDIC. Yeah, the best thing, what people do here in Panama is they just diversify. So if you're going to be depositing quite a bit of money, instead of putting all your eggs in one basket, you might want to have a couple of different accounts so that you've got some money in one account, some money in the other. And if you get the least little inkling that you can move the money around to whoever's paying the highest interest rate. Next caller is area code 334. Go ahead.
Hi, Jackie. This is Freeland. I'm just curious about once somebody moves down there and they've got a Social Security retirement, how long before you can actually do a tax-free on it? I understand you can, after a period of time, you can actually not have any taxes taken out.
Actually, not for your pension. The only thing that's going to be tax-free is active earned income. But when it's Social Security or pension from a job, that's considered passive income, and you're still going to have to pay taxes. You still have to file a tax return. You still have to pay taxes on that, unfortunately, until the laws change.
Is that in Panama, or is that? Yeah, is that in Panama or is that the U.S. you have to file the taxes?
No, you don't owe any taxes in Panama at all. Panama has a territorial taxing system, so you're only taxed on income that you make selling a product or service in Panama. But on your pension or your Social Security, you won't owe a penny in taxes to Panama, but you'll still have to file a tax return and pay taxes in the United States.
I got you. And so how... Since you're living in Panama, how would you file? Would you just do it online?
I have a CPA and a tax attorney in the United States. They do my returns for me, and I give them what's called an 8879 that gives them the authority to electronically file for me.
I got you. Okay,
but
appreciate it.
You can use TurboTax or something like that and file your tax return just online.
Yeah, that's what I do anyway with H&R Block. They get a free system, so.
There you go. Yeah, they can keep on doing your tax returns. Our next caller is James. Go ahead.
Hi, Jackie. Good to hear from you again. it's funny. I was actually deciding. I so badly wanted to go to Boquete, but I realized how much I really want to basically live in the water since I'm a disabled veteran and live in constant pain. I was wondering if you could name two places where I could do something like free diving, spear fishing, kite surfing, in like two locations that aren't going to be, you know, the end of the world on my bank account. And then like some tips and advice for areas in that part of Panama, such as like, I know you had mentioned before, look out for metal roofs. So I was hoping you could take a moment and talk about that kind of area of Panama.
So you've basically got three choices. One is going to be around the Coronado, San Carlos, Gorgona, Chame area, which is they're all right next to each other. It's a little bit more pricey over there. The other area is going to be between Chitré, Las Tablas, and Petosi over in that area. Your other choice would be on the Caribbean side around Bocas del Toro. So those are going to be your choices. Next caller is Charles. Go ahead.
Hi, Jackie. I'm a school administrator, and I'm looking. Can you hear me, Jackie?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. I'm a school administrator and I'm looking to retire into Panama, the way my contract works, I would have to retire at the end of the academic year, which is June 30. So I was thinking, would September or October, early October, be a decent month to try to relocate?
Sure. Either one of those months would be a good time to relocate. Know that in October, we're more likely to get more rain in the late afternoon. So in September, we might get rain 3 times a week. In the late afternoon. In October, we might get rain 4 or 5 times a week in the late afternoon. In November, also, we might get rain 4 or 5 times a week. So when you get here and we get that rain 4 or 5 times a week in October, don't think, oh my gosh, I've made a big mistake. I shouldn't have come here, because by December, it's going to go away, and we'll be back into the dry season. So just, and you know, understand that we have these seasons, and it's not hot or cold, it's wet or dry. And that, so coming in September, you'd have more days with less rain than you would in October.
And would there be places to rent? I don't want to run into a, you know,
there'll
a
be plenty,
high rental yeah. season.
No, you'll have plenty of places to rent.
Okay.
The snowbirds don't come down until usually the middle of December or after Christmas. So you'll have plenty to choose from.
Thank you, Jackie.
Okay, you're welcome. So next caller, do you have a question for Andrea? I believe this is Janice. Go ahead.
Yeah, I plan on booking one of your I have booked one of your tours for the end of next summer, but it came up today. I have two questions, one about opening your own business, and the other is a beachy question. And I heard the stories about the length of time it takes to get established and open a business, but my husband and I are planning to come and on a pensionado visa to get that ultimately, but I'm wondering if we decide to rent bed and breakfast style of room or an extra home on our property, whether that would require different circumstances, whether we would be considered that we'd have to have a work permit just to do those rentals.
Yes, you would legally. If you that's working in Panama, so legally you would need to do that, plus file tax returns on your income in Panama.
I got that part. What about the pensionado visa? That pretty much negates that.
Yeah, pensionado visa,
okay.
You cannot work in Panama.
Right, okay.
And you can't work, question... and you can never get a work permit.
Okay.
The good thing is, though, even if you get the Friendly Nation visa, you still qualify for what we call the jubilado or the pensionado discounts, so long as you meet the age requirements of 55 for women and 60 for men. So you can still get
mm-hmm.
the discounts. It just costs a little bit more to get the Friendly Nation visa, but I would say... for everyone that's on the call, if you're thinking of that you might want to do some kind of work when you get to Panama, get that Friendly Nation visa while you can, because we don't know how long it's going to be around. It was passed in 2012 by executive order by one of our previous presidents, Martinelli, who's in big trouble right now, by the way, for corruption charges. But there's been talk of that Friendly Nation visa could go away. So grab that Friendly Nation visa while you can, get that work permit while you can, because the next step up, the Friendly Nation visa is not that expensive, but the next step up to having some kind of a business in Panama starts at about $160,000 and has a lot of requirements to have Panamanian employees and all kinds of other things. So get that Friendly Nation visa if you think you might want to work. Now, some of you, I know the only thing you want to work on is your tan or your golf game and nothing else, and that's okay. Then you can go with a pensionado visa. But if you think you want to rent out properties or do any kind of a business selling things at our Tuesday market or other farmers markets around town, get that Friendly Nation visa.
Yeah. One thing I'd like to mention on that is that with the pensionado visa, if you qualify for a pensionado visa and you don't plan on working and you are 30 years old, you still get all of the discounts as if you were 55 for women or 60 for men. So it doesn't matter what age you are, that pensionado visa gives you that discount. And if you're on a Friendly Nation or something else, then that's when your birth date's going to be coming into play.
Right. Okay. One other thing I want to mention about the pensionado visa, it is possible for you to own a business with a pensionado visa. So you could own a business and you can hire, like a restaurant, you can own a restaurant, but you would hire other people to work in it. You cannot physically work in your business, but you can own a business. You just can't work in it. But if you want to, in a bed and breakfast would certainly be a business where you'd want to be working in and interacting with your guests and everything, so it's a different situation. But you can't own a business with a pensionado. You just can't work in it until you get a work permit, which you can never get if you have a pensionado visa.
Gotcha. Okay. The second question I had, because I've lived in Florida and done a lot of diving all my life in the Caribbean and along Florida shores, I'm wondering, in terms of the water on the Pacific side of Panama versus Bocas del Toro area, I'm just looking for something calm and clear for like really easy snorkeling and things to see. Even down in Playa Las Lajas and that area down to Santa Catalina, is it too rough there and the water stirred up to be good visibility, so I've got to go to the Caribbean?
Off the shore of Santa Catalina, some of the best scuba diving anywhere.
Okay.
Yeah, so yeah, you wouldn't have to go.
That's on the Caribbean side too, isn't it?
Yeah. No, Santa Catalina is at the tip of the Azuera.
Okay.
So there's good diving on both the Caribbean side and on the Pacific side, but you wouldn't have to go to the Caribbean side to have good diving.
Great. And there's some things to see near shore as well as offshore?
A little more offshore, but not that far offshore. Yeah. And then even off of Boca Chica and Las Lajas, not so much onshore, but it's 20-minute water taxi ride to the islands, and there'd be some good snorkeling, and that's not very far. So, but it's not going to be so much close to shore. It's going to be a little further off of shore, but there's always going to be water taxis available to get you there.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. So, Andrea, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk to everybody and share with them what your life is like here in Panama, and also, because you're a travel agent, give them advice on when to book that ticket to come here. Our bottom line is don't book it, just wait. I'll send out an email whenever I think it's a good time to book your ticket, but I would say hold off for right now. Andrea, do you have any final words of wisdom for people that are on the call?
I don't, but good luck, and hope to see you this way soon.
All right. Well, thanks again, Andrea, and thank you for everybody who was on the call. Good night, everybody. Good night, Andrea.
Bye-bye.
Bye.